You're listening to the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Chronicles. And now here's Pastor Sandy as he teaches through 1 Chronicles chapter 17 through 22.
Chapter 19. Now it happened after this that Nahash, the king of the people of Ammon, died, and his son reigned in his place. Then David said, I will show kindness to Hanun, the son of Nahash, because his father showed kindness to me. I mean, David's motivation's pure here. He just wants to do a kind deed for someone who's been a blessing to him. And so David sent messengers to comfort him concerning his father. And David's servants came to Hanun in the land of the people of Ammon to comfort him. And the princes of the people of Ammon, they said to Hanun, do you think that David really honors your father because he has sent comforters to you? Did his servants not come up to you to search and to overthrow and to spy out the land? Don't trust a man. David's up to no good. Now, tragically, Hanun believes in his counselors more than in the good intentions of David, and he acts in a horribly rash way. Therefore, Hanun took David's servants, shaved them, and cut off their garments in the middle at their buttocks and sent them away. In other words, he was disgracing these messengers from David. You could say that he tries to outflank David's army. Here he attacks them from the rear. He fights in the light of the moon. Hanun exposes their derrieres, and it's an insult to the king who sent them. Verse 5. Then some went and told David about the men, and he sent to meet them because the men were greatly ashamed. I mean, can you imagine this happening today? And, you know, them clipping the seat out of their trousers and sending them back somewhere, you know, that way. It'd be an insult today, too. And the king said, wait at Jericho until your beards have grown and then return. In ancient Israel, it was a shame for a man to be seen unshaven. To shave a man's beard was, in essence, to strip him of his masculinity. And so these guys were too ashamed to show their faces in public. So before they can return, they have to take time to let their beards grow back. When the people of Ammon saw that they had made themselves repulsive to David, in other words, we made a big mistake, Hanun and the people of Ammon sent 1,000 talents of silver to hire for themselves chariots and horsemen from Mesopotamia, from Syria and Makkah, and from Zobah. Hanun, he realizes he's blown it, and he has insulted David, and he's now anticipating retaliation. And so he goes out and he hires an army of mercenaries. Verse 7. And so they hired for themselves 32,000 chariots with the king of Makkah and his people, who came and encamped before Medaba. Also the people of Ammon gathered together from their cities and came to battle. Now when David heard of it, he sent Joab and all the army of the mighty men. Then the people of Ammon came out and put themselves in battle array before the gate of the city. And the kings who had come were by themselves in the field. Now when Joab saw that the battle line was against him before and behind, he chose some of Israel's best and put them in battle array against the Syrians. In other words, Joab is prepared to fight against Ammon. But his intelligence tells him that Hanun has hired these Syrians, and so he's going to have to fight on two fronts instead of just one. And so he splits his army, and he puts a second division under his brother, Abishai. And the rest of the people he put under the command of Abishai, his brother, and they set themselves in battle array against the people of Ammon. Then he said, if the Syrians are too strong for me, then you shall help me. But if the people of Ammon are too strong for you, then I will help you. Be of good courage, and let us be strong for our people and for the cities of our God. And may the Lord do what is good in his sight. And guys, this is how brothers ought to behave. This is how sisters ought to behave. If I look at my brother, and if I see that the battle he's fighting, that he's losing, And the forces around him seem to be too strong for him. I need to go to him. And I need to offer my support. And I need to fight with him. And if he sees that the battle I'm fighting, I'm losing because the forces around me are too strong for me, I need his help. He needs to come and be willing to fight with me in the battle that I'm facing. This was good strategy. Joab and Abishai, they're acting like brothers here, as you and I need to act. And so Joab and the people who were with him drew near for the battle against the Syrians, and they fled before him. And when the people of Ammon saw that the Syrians were fleeing, they also fled before Abishai, his brother, and entered the city. And so Joab went to Jerusalem. God gave Israel victory without even firing a shot. Now when the Syrians saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they sent messengers and brought the Syrians who were beyond the river. And Shophak, the commander of Hadadezer's army, went before him. When it was told David, he gathered all Israel, crossed over the Jordan, and came upon them, and set up in battle array against them. So when David had set up in battle array against the Syrians, they fought with him. And we got some Syrian soldiers. Yeah, there's some Syrians. I don't know if these look like those guys, but these are Syrian soldiers. And then the Syrians fled before Israel. And David killed 7,000 charioteers and 40,000 foot soldiers of the Syrians and killed Shophak, the commander of the army. And when the servants of Hadadezer saw Shophak, the commander of the army, and when the servants of Hadadezer saw that they were defeated by Israel, they made peace with David and became his servants. And so the Syrians were not willing to help the people of Ammon anymore. Fight your own battles from now on. We're tired of getting beaten by David. Chapter 20. Now it happened in the spring of the year, at the time kings go out to battle, that Joab led out the armed forces and ravaged the country of the people of Ammon and came and besieged Rabbah. But David stayed at Jerusalem, and Joab defeated Rabbah and overthrew it. But one of David's mighty men died in the siege of Rabbah. A man who lived in Jerusalem, in fact, just down the street from David, not too far from David's palace, for you could see from David's bedroom balcony this man's rooftop. And David's neighbor was a man by the name of Uriah the Hittite, and Uriah's wife was named Bathsheba. For the rest of that story, you should read 2 Samuel chapter 11. But it's interesting. It begins the same way as 1 Chronicles chapter 20 begins. Let me read it to you. It happened in the spring of the year, at the time when kings go out to battle. But rather than telling us about the siege of Rabbah, instead, we're told, David arose from his bed and walked on the roof. And from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful to behold. And of course, the fleeing that followed spawned a terrible tale of adultery and ultimately murder, eventually leading the royal family into moral decline and chaos throughout David's kingdom. You know, it's interesting that such an important piece of the puzzle, a story that's given a whole chapter in 2 Samuel, gets completely overlooked here in Chronicles. Isn't that interesting? But we've talked about why. Remember, Ezra penned Chronicles not to point out Israel's failures. In fact, they had just spent 70 years in exile in Babylon, in a foreign land, for punishment of their sins. These Jews were well aware of their sins and their failures. What they needed was encouragement to start over. And that's why Ezra dwells on David's successes and he minimizes his failures. Aren't you glad God treats us the same way? That through his grace, through his mercy, he's willing to forget and forgive. He's willing to overlook our past mistakes. He's willing to dwell on our successes and even minimize our failures. Aren't you glad God treats us with such grace as well? Well, verse 2 tells us, then David took their king's crown from his head and found it to weigh a talent of gold. A talent was a dry measurement of about 100 pounds. And so obviously the king didn't wear this crown for too long, not at any one time. And there were precious stones in it, and it was set on David's head. And he brought out the spoil of the city in great abundance. And he brought out the people who were in it and put them to work with saws, with iron picks, and with axes. So David did to all the cities of the people of Ammon. Then David and all the people returned to Jerusalem. Now it happened afterward that war broke out at Gezer with the Philistines, at which time Sibekai the Hushathite killed Ziphi, who was one of the sons of the giant, and they were subdued. Notice Goliath wasn't the only giant that David fought. 2 Samuel chapter 21 is the parallel passage to 1 Chronicles chapter 20. And Samuel mentions another incident that Ezra excludes. If you go back and you look in 2 Samuel 21, in verses 16 and 17, you'll discover that a giant by the name of Ishni-Benob wanted to kill David, and he almost did. In fact, if it hadn't been for Abishai coming to David's defense at the last second, David would have been dead meat. It's interesting, though. Ezra leaves that encounter out of the Chronicles for the same reason that he excludes David's adultery with Bathsheba. His purpose is to encourage these Jews, not to frighten them. He's recalling decisive victories, not near misses. Well, again, there was war with the Philistines, and Elhanan, the son of Jair, killed Lahmi, the brother of Goliath the Hittite, the shaft of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. Notice here, Goliath had a brother. In fact, he had four brothers. And that's why David, when he went down to the little brook to gather a stone to put in his sling that he used to kill Goliath, he didn't just pick one stone out of the brook, he picked five stones. Did you think he was worried about missing? Not so. No, he picked five stones because he knew that Goliath had four brothers. And so he got one for Goliath and he got one for the brothers in case they tried to retaliate. And yet again, there was war at Gath, where there was a man of great stature with 24 fingers and toes, six on each hand and six on each foot. And he also was born to the giant. This guy was a freak of nature. Notice anything strange about that guy? He got six fingers, that's right, on one hand. So did this giant. Now imagine trying to buy shoes. Or worse, trying to buy gloves. How does a six-finger guy buy a pair of gloves? And imagine when the guy was a kid and his daddy signed him up for Little League Baseball. I mean, how do you find a glove with six fingers? It's impossible. He had to have one specially made. And of course, you know what Little League team the kid played on, don't you? You don't know? The Giants, of course. Hey, 24 digits on a kid, six fingers, six toes. He may have been on steroids. Imagine a giant on steroids. Oh my. After 3,000 years, some things remain the same. Actually, these giants may have been on some kind of spiritual steroids. They may have been on demonic enhancers. We talked back when we went through the book of Joshua about the possibility that these giants were actually the byproduct of Canaanite practices, occult practices. Did you know that sex with demons is still a part of the occult even to this day? And it could be that these demons took on human bodies and had sex with women and sired a family or two of giants. Apparently, this was going on before the flood of Noah. This was one reason why God took such radical measures and wiped out, you know, everyone but the family of Noah. It's probable that there's no coincidence that these giants appear at this point in history where God's people again are about to take the land that he's given them, and they become the leading opposition against Israel and against the takeover. Again, it's could it be a very demonic thing that was going on here among these giants? Well, we're still talking about this six-fingered, six-toed giant, verse 7. So when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimei, David's brother, killed him. Now remember, David's brothers were among the Israelites who cowered away at the taunts of Goliath. You remember that when David took the cheese and the goat's milk and all up to his brothers to feed his brothers, and the giant would come out and he would taunt the armies of Israel, and everyone would, you know, hunker down in the, you know, in the foxholes and all, and they were scared to death of the giant Goliath. Before David stepped up and trusted God and went out to kill Goliath, there were no other giant killers in Israel. Everyone feared the giants. But notice here, David set an example that even his brothers followed. Notice here, this is Shimei, David's brother. He now kills a giant. What in the world's happened to these guys? Evidently, David's faith had rubbed off on his brothers and other men in Israel. You see, faith is contagious. David trusted God, and it created a whole battalion of giant killers in Israel. This is why when you step up and you face the giants in your life, you teach your kids how to face giants. You make turn them into little giant killers. And the people around you, you turn them into giant killers. And all of a sudden, you're a part of a mighty army because you've fought those battles and you've won through Jesus Christ. And now others want to follow in your footsteps. I love verse 8. It sums it up. These were born to the giant in Gath, and they fell by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. Obviously, even David's servants got into the action. Chapter 21. Now Satan stood up against Israel and moved David to number Israel. Now, some folks point to an apparent contradiction here. For 2 Samuel 24, verse 1 explains, again, the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, go number Israel and Judah. All right. 2 Samuel 24 says, God moved David. 1 Chronicles 21 says, Satan moved David. Which is it? The answer is both. Remember, God is sovereign. Ultimately, God either causes or he allows all that happens in this universe. And God at times even uses Satan. Don't be surprised to learn that God at times uses the forces of darkness to accomplish his will. That doesn't excuse them. It just means God uses them. Martin Luther once referred to Satan as God's ape. God is the organ grinder, and Satan at times must dance to his tune. Apparently, God saw in David's heart a sin that needed to be addressed. Pride can destroy even a good man. And so God allowed David to be tempted by the devil. And so David said to Joab and to the leaders of the people, go number Israel from Beersheba to Dan and bring the number of them to me that I may know it. David orders a census. He wants to count the population of Israel, which was not an evil in and of itself, understand. You remember Moses numbered the people so that he could organize and he could serve the people. The problem with David's census was his motivation. David wanted a nose count so he could boast in the great extent of his kingdom, the vastness of his realm. David wanted to number the nation not for their benefit, but for his benefit. Remember, too, in Bible times, counting implied ownership. Normally, you don't number somebody else's stuff. You know, if you're counting my money, I'm worried about what are you about to do, you know? If you over in my house counting my stuff out in my backyard, you know, what are you doing here? Why are you counting my stuff? You only count your own stuff. You don't count somebody else's stuff. And David's desire to number the people of Israel sprang from a desire in his heart to flaunt the vastness of his kingdom. Satan stirred up his ego, and God brought judgment on David. If we start counting so that we can, you know, run around and brag, well, our church has so many, we've got this many people. How many do you have? We have more than you have. That's the kind of stuff that displeases God. And that's the kind of thing that David gets into here and that God judges him for. You see, it all depends on your motive. Verse 3 tells us, and Joab answered. And Joab was really brave enough to question the king's motive here. He knew something was wrong, and you got to hand it to him. He shows a lot of courage here. May the Lord make his people 100 times more than they are. But my Lord the king, are they not all my Lord's servants? Why then does my Lord require this thing? Why should he be a cause of guilt in Israel? Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab. Joab must have known something's wrong here. Your motive's not right, David. Therefore, Joab departed and he went throughout all Israel and he came to Jerusalem. And then Joab gave the sum of the number of the people to David. All Israel had 1,100,000 men who drew the sword, and Judah had 470,000 men who drew the sword. But he did not count Levi and Benjamin among them, for the king's word was abominable to Joab. And there are all kinds of theories as to, you read the commentaries, why did he choose those two tribes? Why didn't he count Levi? Why didn't he count Benjamin? I like to think he just had enough. He had all that he could stomach. He just kind of got to the point where he said, I'm just not counting anybody else. This is wrong. I shouldn't be doing it. It's an abominable thing. I can't stomach anymore. Enough's enough. Well, while we're here, there's another apparent contradiction that we can clear up. The count in 2 Samuel chapter 24, verse 9, is different from the numbers that we have here. 2 Samuel says that Israel numbered 800,000. Here we're told 1,100,000. Judah equaled 500,000. Here we're told 470,000. Here's a possible resolution. The writer of Samuel evidently chose not to record some of the freestanding army. 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 1 says that David gathered 30,000 choice troops. Add those choice troops to Judah's 470,000 in verse 5, and you get 500,000, the same as the number in 2 Samuel 24. 1 Chronicles 27 describes 12 divisions of 24,000 men are 288,000. Round that off to 300,000. Add it to 2 Samuel's 800,000, and you get 1.1 million, the number recorded in verse 5. Hey, just study the book for yourself. Just because somebody comes up to you and says, oh, what's this? The Bible's contradicting itself. Come on, man. Look into it a little bit. Study it a little bit. There's usually an easy explanation for all these supposed apparent contradictions. I don't think there are any contradictions at all, only apparent contradictions, only things that you didn't look into far enough to realize that there was a good answer for them. The Bible is an inerrant book. It's God's word. It's without error. It is inspired by the living God. And don't let anybody rob you of that confidence. Verse 7 tells us God's reaction to David's census. God was displeased with this thing. Therefore, he struck Israel. You don't want that to ever get said about you when you do something. God was displeased with this thing. That's not a good thing to hear. And the nation, notice, is about to get judged for the leader's sin. Hey, did you know this is why it's important that we elect godly leaders in our nation? We had a discussion about this at the dinner table last night, why it's important to vote. The reason it's important to vote is because it's not just the leader himself, if he makes bad decisions, that will get judged. But God will judge the people on behalf of the leader's bad decisions.
Listening to Bible teaching here on the radio is a huge blessing that many of our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world simply don't have. We rejoice in this opportunity to share Pastor Sandy's messages with you. We do want to be sure to remind you that radio is not a church. Radio should be a complement to what God is already doing in your personal discipleship through the local body of believers that you're a part of. Maybe you're listening today. You don't have a home church. You've visited various places, but nothing seems to fit. First, if you live in the Atlanta, Georgia area, we want to personally invite you to join us for worship at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. We meet every Sunday morning at 9:30 and 11:15 a.m. For more information, including driving directions, please log on to sandyadams.org and follow the link to the church website. Now, if you're listening outside of the Atlanta, Georgia area and are looking for a home church, we encourage you to log on to calvarychapel.com and find a Calvary Chapel in your area that teaches through the Bible just like Pastor Sandy does each day here on this program. Well, we wish we had more time today, but we've come to the close of today's broadcast. Be sure to remember to join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through God's Word. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.